Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. Season 3.
Number 3. I'm Casey Clapp.
I'm Alex Croson. Wow, we switched the intro.
It was a rhyme thing I wanted to do. I was hoping you were going to keep going with the sing-songiness to it.
Oh, wow. That was some subtle setup, my man.
Sorry. I'm bad at setting things up. I'm just like, why don't you do that? And you're like, do what? Like that thing I was thinking in my brain that you should have done, Alex.
Well, Casey, here we are. We've made it to 25 episodes.
That's incredible. Happy quarter century.
Happy quarter century, yeah, my like good
it.
Man.
Lowercase c. I feel like this is century, the way they talk about like bike races that are 100 miles. So
yes,
century.
Or
like,
centurions.
Yeah, exactly. They're just 100 years old. Is that right?
A centurion is also a type of, I think, ancient Roman soldier.
That was the other thing I was curious if you were thinking.
Yes, of course. I'm always thinking about ancient Roman soldiers. Are you kidding me?
I know that. I do. I should have just made the assumption. I'm sorry.
Casey, if I'm honest, and I'm going to be really vulnerable here.
All right. I'd like that.
When we started this project, I couldn't see it past about 6 episodes.
About 6?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just didn't know what it was going to be, what it was going to look like. I was very afraid of going into this thing.
Okay.
I felt simultaneously confident and totally lacking confidence.
Yeah, that's how I live my life.
Boy, oh boy. But here we are at episode 25, our third season.
Look at us.
I mean, we decided to make seasons 12 episodes. They could have been, 20 episodes, then we'd be in season 2.
Yeah, which is dumb.
So I don't want to pat ourselves on the back for being in season 3 when we set the season length.
Hey, you know what? Yeah, I think we should actually readjust this and say we're in season 5.
Yes.
Because we only have 5 episode seasons.
I am not going to go back and change all of the episode descriptions.
You have one job, Alex. also need to edit all of the Instagram posts.
Oh, my Lord.
Sorry.
I will say we didn't set the season length. Mother Nature did.
Thank you. I was going to actually note that we just agreed with a set parameter of the Northern Hemisphere.
That's right.
I guess both hemispheres, just different times.
It's hard not to agree with the set parameter for Mother Nature.
Yeah, it's true.
And Casey, speaking of Mother Nature, we are in on the tail end, I would say.
Somewhat long tail.
Of a fucking ridiculous heat wave in Portland, more generally in the Pacific Northwest.
That's exactly right, Alex. Yeah. You went down to the river, you said. You have air conditioning, tiny little apartment here, and it's still hot.
Yes. I went to the river with my partner, and boy, oh boy, I did it to prove my admiration for this person. And I walked away. I almost had to leave the river in a body bag.
That's the worst, Alex.
It was terrible.
Oh, man. I went down to the river and just stood in it for a long time. In fact, I think I've been in two rivers since this has all come down.
Yes. Well, you're accustomed to such a thing. I'm an indoor boy.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm basically a vampire, and I damn near died out there.
Well, I think anyone could be a vampire in this weather. The sun would have burned anyone's skin, no matter how much they go out outside.
Yeah, 115 degrees.
That's just so awful. And Alex, of course, I just have to say it. This is climate change. It's happening. Like, yes, we're seeing the repercussions of it.
Yes,
I read about it. It's a tropical cyclones that are happening earlier because they're happening earlier. What normally would be a kind of low pressure time in like June, uh-huh, it is now becoming that's happening earlier. So you get this like bump in like a heat where you get this high pressure system that then like draws warm air from the tropics and from the east. It was just like all these things happen earlier now. But then, of course, now we're just going to have July and August, the hottest days or hottest months of the year.
Yeah. Oh boy. I have to say to people who are still denying that climate change is even real. Yeah. Portland had a ice storm.
Yeah.
And a heat wave within like 4 months of each other.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Insane. And like both of them were massive, like really big things. Yeah. No one has ever really experienced. I think Seattle. Or Spokane, some place was like, they broke their record for having the X amount of days over 100 in a row, and it was like 3. And then here in Portland, like you said, it was like, I think 7 or 8 degrees higher than the last high temperature that we had in like 1989 and 1965 or something like that.
Wow.
So I want to note, yes, it has happened before, but those were spikes. And now they're happening. All those spikes are just closer together because we're changing these things. So, yeah, you know, it is what it is. It's climate change. And on top of that, we're doing a tree podcast. Uh-huh. Alex, and this is why we are doing it. This is the whole reason I'm here, is because I was like, we got to tell people about this. Like, this is my job to proselytize. Every time I was just sitting outside in like the only possible place it would be comfortable to sit, underneath a tree.
Yeah.
Usually in a river, but you couldn't even be in the sun in the river because the sun and the ambient air temperature was so hot.
Yeah, I had not a tree, but a vinyl pop-up.
Yeah.
And being underneath that even was like being in an oven.
Yeah, right?
Just terrible.
Just terrible. So, everyone, if you are looking to do something to help not stop this, because let's be honest, it's unstoppable at this point, mm-hmm, A, ride your bike everywhere if you can, and B, please, 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 please go plant a tree and rip up a little bit of pavement, a big tree. We'll even talk about that a little bit here today. But, my goodness.
I will say the best way for us common humans, I feel, mm-hmm, is to vote for people who believe in this thing that's happening.
Yeah, there you go.
And can create legislature that prevents corporations from dumping just like an obscene amount of emissions into the atmosphere. And it's their fucking fault.
Yeah.
It's not your fault because you drive to work in the morning. Sure, take a bike like Casey does.
Take a bike.
But also vote.
Well, we got to change the status quo, Alex, I think is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Season 3, Casey, here's what it is. Last season, we went on a world tour.
Yep.
Quite happy to be home.
I feel very comfortable. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry, I don't. Never mind. Take
no,
back.
It's hot in here.
Need to go to the mountains.
We had to turn the air conditioning off to record this. So season 2 was a world tour. Season 3 is classic, which just means that we're catching up on some trees that we wanted to do season 1, but we couldn't.
Yep.
A lot of listener-requested trees, a lot of trees that you want to do, a lot of trees that I wanted to do.
Yep, we're not going to tell everyone what those are, so you just get to sit patiently with bated breath, hoping
yes,
that your request was answered.
Yes, and I think we're about to answer one of them now.
I think so.
Casey, this week, for our first episode of Season 3, we are discussing the Bradford Pear.
Blah!
A hot-and-button tree, if ever there were one.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair way to put it.
Yes. Well, Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are walking. Oh, we could be walking down here on 20th Avenue.
I was going to say,
about 4 blocks from my home, and we get a whiff of something.
I see what you did there.
Just potent as anything. And yep, I go, Casey? And I yep, look at you like, is that you?
And I'm like, this is not me.
Nah. What we see some Bradford pear trees.
We do.
What do they look like? Let's discuss morphology, a word that I am currently obsessed with using.
You're doing it really well, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, no doubt.
Let's talk leaf margin.
Okay.
Let's talk bark pattern. And let's certainly talk smell. Casey Clapp, renowned dendrologist, Casey Clapp, our first take it away of the season.
This is a notorious tree. Notorious in several ways, the first of which we will talk about after I describe all those things you just asked me to describe.
Okay.
I almost skipped to the good stuff.
Wow.
Don't want to do that. Got to build up.
That's right.
So the way this tree works is it is a beautiful pear tree.
Would you call this part foreplay?
No, I would not, Alex. You cackling in the corner, so proud of yourself.
Go ahead.
Bradford play.
Go ahead.
Bradford play.
Wow.
Damn, I can't quite get there.
I liked it.
All right. So this is a pear tree. So pears in the genus Pyrus are quite common. Everyone knows Pyrus communis, the classic pear that we get our delicious fruit from.
I think that's a communist pirate.
It is. It's a yeah, that's true. Pyrus communis. Yeah, you're right. Look at you and your creativity just bouncing off the walls right now.
That was the equivalent of Bradford play.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, we should both stop.
I just wanted to level the playing field.
Yeah, bring it down to my level. Thank you. Well, in this case, we are talking about a pear tree that does not have delicious fruit that you can eat. I have to say, I generally don't like pears. They're never been my favorite.
Wow, okay.
It's the same thing for apples. Like, you eat one and you're hungrier afterwards. They are the same bastardized gigantic fruit that will crush the tree that it's on. Blah, 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 blah.
Not a poem man, huh?
No, not really.
Cool.
Not really. I can say that. The ones that are they're edible, they're not that good.
My thing with pears, high ratio of bad pears to good pears.
Ooh, yeah.
In my experience, Larry David said this about apricots. It's hard to find a good pear.
Yeah, it's exactly. I'm glad he said that about apricots.
But when I do, man, oh man, I love a pear.
Yeah.
A good pear. Gotta have a good one.
That's fair. Well, this is a bad pear. It is inedible for humans. The little tiny fruit, when it makes fruit, is about the size of maybe a nickel-sized little globe of a poem.
Okay.
Yes, and you did note that it is a poem. It's in the rose family, which is a very large family. They have these nice little white flowers that have 5 petals, and they usually are just this big puffy cloud of white in the springtime.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their fruit in the fall, when it actually matures, are these little kind of... They're kind of mauve colored, you know, kind of like a light grayish brownish with like little specks on it.
The fruit are?
That's what the fruit look like. Yeah, okay. These little tiny circles.
Interesting.
And of course, a pome, P-O-M-E, is the fruit that you referenced earlier. Those fruits are fruits that have the actual receptacle, the stem tissue that holds onto the flower. That is actually what expands out and becomes fleshy, which is why pears and apples have such a strange texture for fruit.
Yeah.
And then if you look on the very bottom, you can see those little sepals from where the flower was, because the flower was at the very bottom of the fruit, and then the base of that flower became the actual fruit that you eat.
That's right.
So the ovary itself actually is the core. That little like papery bit in the middle has those seeds. That part is actually the flower or the ovary that goes bloop, back down into the receptacle there.
No kidding.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
I feel like I've had a pear before that had like a little umbilical cord going through the bottom half of it.
Oh, really?
That connected to the ovary.
Yeah, that very well might be where it'd be kind of like
kind of a stringy sort of. Connective tissue almost.
Like from the top or from the very bottom of the fruit where like the little sepals would be?
Yeah, from the sepals up through the middle of the fruit to the core.
Yeah, that's totally it. Yeah, that's exactly it, because that would be the kind of line that the pollen would have had to go to get down into the ovary section.
Wow, interesting. Yeah,
it got elongated, surely, as the fruit got bigger, of course.
Sure.
Let's see, what else about this little thing? All right, so it has this really rough bark.
Okay.
Especially it gets older, it's broken up into little square plates along the side. It's not like comfortable to like put your hand on. You don't want to really climb it. It's very pokey. And they have long leaves that are simple, alternately arranged leaves that have really long petioles. That's a really cool ID characteristic of these trees, where they their leaves they kind of pop out and they kind of are on just the classic fruit tree little pegs. And so you usually get a bunch of leaves that all pop out from like the same little peg bud that's coming out, stem.
Little bouquets of leaves.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And they have, I think their margins have like the tiniest little serrations on it and those really, really long petioles that are like almost the same size or longer than the leaf blade itself.
The margin is quite wavy.
Yeah, it's very that is very true. The whole thing, yeah.
It's like a fried piece of bacon, how it gets kind of curly and curvy. Yes,
perfect example.
It's like that all the way around the edge. Why does it do that?
Honestly, I don't know. I think that's just the way some leaves get curl or get wavy like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you exactly why.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it's because it puts on so much growth in between the veins that it just doesn't have enough room to be straight, so it kind of has to arc a little bit.
Yeah, so it's like tension a little bit. It's pulling itself.
No, more compression. It would be pushing the leaf you're trying to fit a flat piece of paper that's 8 inches wide in between something that's only 7 inches wide.
Right, so it kind of curls,
bends itself up. Yeah,
I see.
So the buds have these; they're like little hairy, kind of dark brown buds, and that's a fun way to find these trees and identify them during the winter time. Sometimes they'll have fruit that's hanging on there on these little long. They kind of look like I imagine like a globe on a string or something like that. Mm. Like you know those balloons. They're like perfectly circular balloons, but they don't put them on strings. They like have them on sticks, so it's very firm. That's kind of what I see them looking like.
100%.
Yeah, but just like a bunch of them.
Some people will understand this reference as it is summertime. There's like this brand of like water balloon that you can come in basically a bunch,
uh-huh.
like almost like a bunch of bananas.
Okay,
and you screw it into the hose, this cap on the end.
Yeah,
and you turn the hose on, and it fills up like 15 balloons at once.
What?
And they're all on sticks, and then the balloons are hanging down here, and the sticks are coming up to the cap.
I've never heard of this.
To a point. It looks just like those.
Oh, my God. Okay, there you go.
For a little visual reference for like five people.
Well, you know what? Those five people are going to be so stoked that you did that.
That's what I'm here for.
Well, thanks, Alex.
I'm here for the 1%. The bottom 1%.
The bottom 1%. Yeah, we're just lowering everything here. Season 3, no regrets. So the other fun thing about these trees is they don't grow very big. They're kind of small trees. They have a couple different varieties. Some that'll grow straight up. Some that kind of go and like grow up and kind of curve over. And maybe about 30 or 40 feet tall. They really don't get massive. And they have these really kind of bronze, red, orange fall color.
Mm-hmm.
So we just named a couple things about these trees that everyone loves for whatever reason. They have really beautiful fall color. Okay, credit. They have really beautiful flowers. Okay, credit. Mm-hmm. They also don't get very tall. And people are like, well, I don't want a big, tall tree because that means maintenance. Give me a nice little flowering tree.
Right. It's a nice medium flower tree.
Exactly. So it kind of fits all those really dumb, ideal boxes that people decide this is how they think a good tree should be.
Right.
So it has all those things. Everyone wants a nice, beautiful flowering tree. However, Alex,
uh-oh.
As I believe you're familiar, this tree does not quite have, it has a tag along that I think is really funny. Everyone's like, oh, these flowers are so beautiful, but man, what smells so bad?
Yeah.
It certainly can't be these gorgeous flowering trees next to us.
Right.
Guess what?
It's the trees.
It is. And Alex, what do they smell like? I know you're asking, you're begging yourself in your mind. Well, because this is such a wholesome podcast, we don't want to say exactly what it smells like.
Oh, come on.
But we want people to have something in your brain to kind of get you there. And this is how I would describe it. Could you give to me a, describe what would you call a group of sailors on the ocean?
I guess depending on where they're from, the Navy?
Yes, it smells like the Navy.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you were putting a bunch of people who had, let's say they had names, and you were trying to alphabetize these people, specifically male-identifying people.
Okay.
And you're trying to put them into groups, and you said, these are the A men, and uh-huh. then the next group would be the B men, and uh-huh. then, you know, so on and so forth. These trees smell like a group in the first, let's say, three letters of the alphabet.
Oh, the third man.
Yes, exactly. The third man.
The classic film.
That's exactly it.
The directed by, and I'm not Googling, this is off the top of my head.
Alex, I love it when you talk slow. It lets me keep up.
Directed by Carol Reed.
That's exactly right. It smells like the movie Third Men by Carol Reed.
Written by Orson Welles. This tree smells like Orson Welles.
It does. That's exactly what it smells like. Famously so. And you know what? All those things don't smell that great.
Casey, let's be upfront with our intelligent, educated audience. These trees smell straight up 100% like...
Semen. Oh, you know, yeah, you'll know it next spring. I know right now this is going to come out in the middle of summertime, so you're not going to be exposed to it, but this is going to be a glass-shattering moment for people in the springtime.
Yes.
They are going to walk down the street, and all of a sudden they're going to be like, what is it? Oh my God, it's just as they said.
Yeah, I don't know if the like nature enthusiast community on social media are much of memers, but I feel like the Bradford pear is among the memes.
It should be. If it's not, they're missing out. But I guess, it's a very niche meme, isn't it?
Black Forester says they smell says they smell like excitement goo.
I think that was the term she used. Yeah, whoops.
Yeah.
Well, that's the case. And so, you know what? Yeah, aside from other things that I'm going to talk about opinions of these trees, shall we say, that helps make it a low one. I don't want to give anything away here.
Low?
But it's just, come on. You know, you always want a flower that smells nice. Isn't that the kind of thing? You put flowers, what is it, ring around the rosy, pocket full of posy. You put your pocket, you know that like old nursery rhyme?
Yes, and it's very dark backstory.
Yeah, super dark backstory. But the entire idea is that they thought the air was bad, so they would take flowers and put them in their pocket to help purify the air.
Well, yes.
And that would stop the plague. And they kind of missed the mark on that one.
Maybe we're talking about exactly the same thing, which is different details, but maybe that the person themselves stank because they were rotting alive.
Oh, yeah.
So they would put posies in their pockets to cut down on the reek.
Yeah, it's kind of the same idea. Yeah. I heard bad air. That was what they diagnosed cause of the plague.
Oh, boy.
Bad air.
Human beings, huh?
Hey, we tried.
I see it's losing points for you because of the smell, but hey, man, we'll see when we come to the review section.
We'll see how it actually comes down here.
Casey, do you know anything about the smell, like botanically, like what's happening?
You know, I really don't. I honestly, in this case, the only thing I could say, like not out of a known fact, but like a understood fact, is that the smell from flowers is a direct thing for some pollinator.
Okay.
So they would have a certain smell and that would attract a certain insect or a certain pollinator of some kind.
Usually
that would be an insect. Sometimes it's a bat. Sometimes it's a bird of some kind. In this case, I'm pretty sure because of the kind of flower, like they're little teeny tiny flowers, they're great for pollinators because they, you know, have all sorts of, they're open. They're not fancy double flowers. So they have all the nectar and things that they'd want.
Yeah.
Pollen, I guess. But honestly, maybe just flies, you know, like there are lots of flowers that smell like rotting flesh. And Jesus. It's like, why does it smell like that? It's like, well, it gets flies to visit. And when flies visit, they love it. They're just like, this smells delicious. There's no rotting flesh here. But then they get covered in pollen and go find the next one.
I'll have this instead.
Yeah, right? So it could be, and in fact, it probably is that, because this is not the only tree that smells like this. If you smell other things, other hawthorns, which are very closely related, they also have poem-like fruits.
Rose
not
family,
like their poems,
right?
Yeah, they also, if you go and smell them specifically, I'm thinking the Lavelle hawthorn. It also just has just this rank smell where you're like, wow, that is not floral at all,
and
it's not quite as pungently particular as the calorie pear.
Yeah.
But the calorie pear really, if you're putting it in a box, you know exactly which box to put it in. All the other ones, you're just like, I don't know, it just doesn't smell like good.
You used this word when describing the smell of the female ginkgo, the rotting female ginkgo seed.
Okay.
And I have just loved it and used it so frequently ever since. The smell of the Bradford pear is ruckus.
Yes. All right, good. I'm glad you use it. There you go. This smells ruckus.
Yeah. Well, Casey, should we get into some Croson's homegrown trivia?
Yeah. What you got here?
Okay. Here's some fun little fast facts about the Bradford pear. Okay.
All right.
Pear wood in general. So this is not specific to the Bradford pear, but why not?
Yeah.
Great wood for making wind instruments.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Casey, can you name me some woodwinds off the top of your head?
Ooh, woodwinds, woodwinds, the woodwinds, I think.
Think about a symphony.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And which of those include wind blowing into them, but are also made of wood? So not any brass.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the clarinet.
Clarinet, a woodwind.
Yes, an oboe.
Also a woodwind. Name me one more.
One more?
Yeah.
Ow,
think
shoot.
Big oboe.
Mm, a tenor sax.
Not quite. Bassoon.
Bassoon. Oh, I don't think I ever would have got that.
It's kind of a sleeper hit.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done it. Those are woodwinds. They're made of wood.
Those are woodwinds. They're made of wood. Huh. You even have a wooden reed.
Yes, that's what I was familiar with. But yeah. So do horns, don't they? Not horn, like the saxophone has that.
Saxophone has a wooden reed. Yeah, kind of the brass section do not.
You like spit in it and you put your tongue on it weird. I tried to do that once. I just couldn't do it. It's very strange.
You do have to moisten it.
Sorry.
And so pearwood is extremely fine textured, so it's good for these wind instruments. Pearwood especially good for Baroque era woodwinds.
Really? Now, what does that mean? What makes a Baroque era woodwind different?
Well, I guess that it was used in the Baroque period. But we're talking wooden flutes and recorders, especially.
Oh, I see. All right.
Don't ask me why. My research stopped there, basically.
I see. I see. Well, they do. I do see things on this where I also see that it's commonly used in veneer, architectural millwood. Marquetry. I don't know what that means. Marquetry, like marquees. I don't know. And musical instruments specifically. So
yes,
I think I wonder why.
This is one of those things where, like, remember with the Oregon white oak?
Yeah.
Where I was like, I could go to a winery and be like, oh, it looks like you are using Oregon white oak for your barrels because that's like the most common one.
Yeah.
This is something you'd be an oboe player. You could be like, oh, is that made of, it's pear wood, isn't it?
Yeah. And they'll, like, be like, wow.
You're like, you have a really high success chance of success.
Huh.
Of getting that right.
I didn't know that. Well, there you go. That's really interesting. I'm always so curious. I wonder, because it's just such a nice, like, tight-grained wood, because it doesn't grow really fast in terms of, like, getting wide.
Yeah, it's probably...
So I guess it stays really small.
It's probably good at funneling the air, and air doesn't seep out of it, I reckon.
Oh, I see.
Also, the reason it's good for using... it's good for making woodcuts for printing.
Yeah, okay.
Traditionally, European woodcuts. In Japan, they used our friend, the Japanese cherry.
Yes, because cherries and apples, pears, these things, they're all known to have really, really hard wood.
Fruit woods.
Yes, exactly.
That's right. And then Casey, the Bradford pear was first introduced in the U.S. in 1909.
I think that's right.
By a plant explorer.
1909, that feels like it's 7 years earlier than I thought.
Oh, well, we'll get into that.
Yeah, we sure will.
By a plant explorer named Frank Meyer. And Casey.
Oh, old Frank Meyer.
Here's a little bit of a cliffhanger. We're going to talk more about Frank Meyer and his plant exploring odyssey after this quick break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring!
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary, Season 3, Episode 1, Classic. We're talking Bradford Pear, our stinky, stinky friend, Casey.
Alex.
Let's get into the meat of this episode.
This is, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about right now comes from a book called Urban Forests by Jill Jones. Ooh. I think it's Jones, but it's J-O-N-N-E-S. So it might be Jonas. Yeah, I don't know.
Jonas?
Yeah, Giannis.
Giannis?
I like Giannis.
Well, you can find this book on our website, completelyarbitrary.com/books.
We'll have it there.
That's right. We're going to start doing this where we have a page of all of our book recommendations.
Yeah, which there are many. So Jill talks about urban forests in a grand sense. Again, we've talked about these a couple different times. Urban forests are the trees that grow, or the forests that grow inside urban areas.
That's right.
Could be a suburb, could be a big city, downtown, parks, cemeteries, street trees, backyard trees.
Mm-hmm.
All those trees that grow in and around where people live that isn't just like a rural area where there's, you know, the density is much lower in terms of human habits or habitations, right?
Right.
So in this book, she talks about the history and specifically talks about this gentleman, Frank N. Meyer, you have listed here. Now, Frank is a really interesting guy. He's a Dutchman originally.
Ah.
And he is actually, he is a crazy character. And the reason that he's crazy is that they just kind of found him in I don't even know where he was. I think he was in, when they first hired him, I think he was just on like a foray in like Cuba and Mexico, just like looking at plants, working at nurseries here and there, and then just kind of wandering around.
Wow.
Like, he's the kind of guy that would walk barefoot, just left. Like, he's just walking, he's like, I'm going to go see what's over there. And then just walks for several days in a direction and then comes back and is like, oh, I saw a lot of cool stuff.
Plant explorer is right.
He is a plant explorer, and specifically, he was a extremely notable plant explorer in the early 1900s over in China.
Right.
China was just also just not very explored. Like, it just did not have the amount of infrastructure that you would have in different other places, especially in terms of colonialization. It certainly had issues, but there just wasn't like, oh yeah, we're going to send a bunch of people over here willy-nilly because this is a place that we own. It was just unexplored from the Western perspective.
Okay.
Especially in terms of plants, where they just had not gone into the deep, dark forests of China and brought out all these different plants.
Hmm.
So I'm always a fan of this because I think it's really interesting to go in and find new plant species and plant them around the world. Like, it's not always good. Sometimes they really turn out horribly.
Mm.
But there's so many different plant species that are so gorgeous that we have planted, like here in your house right now. These are tropical plants that we have as house plants.
That's right.
They help brighten our day.
And Casey, this whole going into China and finding plants thing reminds me of our stellarly rated tree, the Don Redwood.
Yes.
Or the River Oak, as it was called locally.
That's right. So this guy, in fact, I wanted to read from her book to talk Ooh. About what happened to this guy. So this is a guy, his name's, okay, so this is Myers, and then Fairchild was his boss, who's basically hiring him. He was like, I want to find this guy and send him out to China to go find these things, but who is this guy? And this is how passionate Myers was about trees. Specifically, it says, Myers described how a, quote, stubborn plant pathologist who did not know enough to mulch them, and he's talking about some trees that were, they were dying, or some bamboos, who did not know enough to mulch them, would not let Meyer do it either. They had died in consequence, and, related Fairchild, as Meyer told me about it, his eyes filled with tears. From that moment, Meyer and I were friends.
That's a real Casey Clapp meet cute.
It totally is. He's just like crying because he's like, all this bamboo died because this guy just didn't mulch him, man.
Wow.
And then they were like, yeah, you're my man. I just thought that was so funny. Yeah, so this guy cares. He's not a like colonizer in the sense where he's like going to go and take all the plants and completely be, an awful person, where there are plenty of instances of that, where they come in, they're just like, we're going to take everything you have. He like had a guide and would like go stay in villages and like would take all the local transportation. It was just this real man of the plants, so to speak.
Casey of his time.
Well, I wish, man. And you know what? He actually died in very mysterious circumstances.
Wait, can I guess?
Oh, sure.
Did he die in a pit trap? Isn't that how all these guys have to go out?
Yeah, I think so. It's just the glory of the whole thing. It's like, you know, as soon as you sign up, he probably had that on his mind the whole time.
Yeah, it's like an unwritten rule. Like, if you come across a pit trap and you're plant exploring, you have to throw yourself in.
Yeah, it's for the glory of your name.
Yes.
No, unfortunately not. No one knows. He was on a...
Unfortunately not.
I know.
Yeah. Sorry. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
He ended up, I think he was just on a boat, like on a riverboat, and there's some civil unrest in the area, and he last was seen leaving his room on the riverboat, and then they found his body like 50 kilometers down
Whoa.
In the river. No one knows exactly what happened.
Interesting.
Yeah. But
Casey, it sounds like a job for the completely arbitrary boys.
It sure does. We'll get right back to you.
You and I become detectives for this one case.
Years later, we just have sticky notes with lines drawn through.
Yeah.
The Chinese Revolution.
And then we figure it out and nobody cares.
Yeah, exactly. Like finding that one plant.
Yeah.
What a sad experiment.
Sorry, Frank.
Well, old Frank ended up finding this tree, and specifically, he was sent out there by his uppers over at the USDA to work on finding a nice tree for the pear orchard industry.
Wow.
Because our pears were getting destroyed by fire blight.
Okay.
This is a disease that comes through. It has a big problem and kills a lot of trees. At least it certainly did back then. This is in 1916, before we had our industrial chemicals in terms of like pesticides and things like that.
Let me say one thing really quick.
Please do.
Sorry, I'm extremely scatterbrained today, but yeah, I can't let this go unsaid.
Never.
Fire Blight.
Yes.
Sounds so much like a Magic the Gathering card.
It should be. Or why any, don't we make it one?
Or any number of RPG spells. Like a fire mage might cast fire blight.
Yeah. And it's fire like, blight on you and your village.
I think it would do like if I had to make something up off the top of my head, yeah. Fire blight would do like 5 fire damage, and then it would burn for several turns.
Oh, so you would I see.
Receive 5 damage at the start, then the next turn you would receive a tick of 3 damage.
Oh,
next turn after that you would receive a tick of 1 damage.
I gotcha.
Because it burns you as
slowly, you know, over time. Yeah, because it's a mage. Well, don't cast Fireblight on me, but also don't cast them on our pears. It is common, a very contagious disease, and it gets on like pears and apples and things like that. As it works out, the calorie pear is extremely resistant to fire blight.
Oh.
So they were like, sweet, we got this really cool pear tree that we can bring back over here, and it can be resistant to fire blight. So we can have a pear species that has a resistance. And the idea would be, of course, you breed the resistance of the calorie pear into the other trees that exist that already make our big fruit.
Oh.
You breed these things together so that you can then get big, big fruited trees that are also resistant to fire blight. It can just grow in anywhere. This is another thing that everyone loved about it. They're like, well, we can plant it here because it can take everything from the most arid, dry, unforgiving mountain slopes to having its feet literally covered in water in a swamp, and it will grow just the same. So it was a great tree to plant in our streets, they thought.
I see.
And of course they brought it over here and we started planting it, and this is what someone said about it one time. It said, few trees possess every desired attribute, but the Bradford ornamental pear comes unusually close to the ideal.
Oh boy.
That's what they said.
And then came the spring.
Then came the spring, and that's why it got so unusually close. That was where it peaked out right there.
Right.
Well, aside from that, Alex, the tree itself had brought or came over, and it has inedible fruit. It's just these little teeny tiny, you know, things. So we never really liked to eat it. We would plant it, we would use the rootstock because the rootstock's really, really tough. But as we've talked about before, we've done that with a lot of different things, and that rootstock can still sprout. So if you cut that tree down, or say for whatever reason it gets injured, the rootstock may in fact send up a sprout. That sprout comes up. That sprout then could still be making all the same things as the initial Bradford pear that it came from. Mm-hmm. So it could be that it has fertile fruit, for instance.
Okay.
And this becomes important because those little tiny pears that we don't eat are delicious for birds. Birds love them.
I see.
Especially birds in the southeastern United States. I'm thinking somewhere like, I don't know, Missouri.
Okay.
If you go to Columbia, Missouri, you'll see the effect of fertile pear fruit and mix it with a bunch of different kinds of birds. And you end up getting an invasive species.
Wow.
Extremely invasive species.
So I always mix up the terms, like, not that this is like an official term, but like a fast grower.
Okay.
Right. With invasive species.
Ah, yeah.
Invasive species means that this tree came from somewhere else.
Yep.
It was planted in this new place.
Yes.
And whoops, it outcompetes everything around it and grows like crazy.
Yes, exactly.
Unforeseen by the humans who planted it.
That is precisely it.
Okay. So it doesn't just mean that it like grows really fast and out of control.
Yeah.
It means that it has the capability to do that because it outcompetes everything because it's not in its native homeland.
Yes, and specifically, it reproduces. That's the big thing.
Oh, sure.
It will self-seed. So you can have a super fast-growing tree that doesn't do anything, that just doesn't reproduce for whatever reason.
I see.
A ginkgo can be a really fast-growing tree that doesn't reproduce anywhere at all.
Yeah.
At least most of the time. But then, the calorie pear, what makes it invasive is it grows really fast, puts out a bunch of fruit. That fruit then gets eaten by birds, pooped somewhere else. Then they grow really fast from the fruit. So you get a bunch of seeds that get planted that are viable that then produce offspring. Those offspring then take over.
And it's not like these grow patterns are predictable. It's not like these trees, these new trees, are growing right next to the mother tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the birds are carrying it to who knows where.
Wherever it happens to be.
And it's like it's just like an infection that just pops up in a bunch of different places.
That's exactly it. That's wow. Yeah, it's disgusting, isn't it, when you think about it that way? You're just like an infection of an invasive species.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Well, in this case, you're exactly right. And the term I would encourage that you use is exotic versus invasive.
Wow.
Where it's kind of a square versus a rectangle kind of thing.
Oh.
Where an invasive species is, by definition, an exotic species.
Sure.
But an exotic species is not necessarily invasive. These will take over the forest.
Okay.
And that's exactly what they do, Alex. They take over the forest and they're super invasive. But that is not what we talked about or came here to talk about.
Oh.
Because they became invasive in a very specific way.
Interesting.
And that way is when they were growing these, they said, wow, this tree's got it all. It comes as close to perfection as can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, in the this is all coming out in the 1960s. So they initially found it in the early 1900s, right?
Right.
40 or 50 years later, you started having big trees, and they started developing them a little bit more and said, oh, this one kind of grows upright. It's really perfect. It doesn't grow past this. We've had these trees now for 40 years. We see what they do. And then they decide they're going to grow a bunch of those. And now there's a bunch of different cultivars. One's called like Chanticleer, Capital, Bradford, Autumn Blaze, Aristocrat. So there's all these different cultivars, some that grow really upright, some that have big flowers, some that stay a little bit short, these kinds of things.
Okay. And when you just included Bradford in that.
Yes.
And am I stepping on your toes here?
No, not at all.
Well, that I just want to bring up the fact that this episode will be called Bradford Pear.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else knows these stinky trees as Bradford Pear.
Yes.
But they're really calorie pears.
That's exactly right. Pyrus caloriana. They are the calorie pear, named after this guy Calorie. He's I believe they call him a French Italian sinologist, which so, is basically he studies China.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Sinologist, maybe.
So the Bradford pear is a variety of the calorie pear?
Yes, exactly.
Created in those first days of cultivation and, mm-hmm. and experimentation?
That's it. That's exactly what happened.
Cool.
So usually they would use them interchangeably. So a Bradford pear, they usually just, a calorie pear and a Bradford pear, essentially the same thing.
Okay.
They just, that's what they call it. Even though it would technically be considered a cultivar of the native one, Pyrus caloriana, that grows in Southeast Asia,
right.
China and Korea and Japan.
Got it.
So you have this tree. Everyone thinks it's great. And they started at the time, things that we will talk about later this season, Alex.
Ooh, teaser.
There were a bunch of trees that we had that were gorgeous, gorgeous trees that we planted everywhere throughout our cities.
Mm-hmm.
An example would be the American elm. Another example would be at the time they planted the Tree of Heaven. They
oh.
also, yeah, you know, classic trees.
No spoilers.
No spoilers here. Anyway, we planted a lot of different trees. And so during the post-World War era, we started losing a lot of these trees to different diseases or different things. So when they're saying, well, what are we going to replace all of our trees with? They had this fun idea. They said, well, we have this really beautiful pear tree.
Mm-hmm.
It can take the worst soil conditions. So why don't we plant them in the streets where we have these little teeny tiny planter spaces that we just want some nice tree in?
Sounds great.
Let's do it. Oh, they only get 30 feet tall.
Even that's, better.
We don't have to worry about the power lines that are above us. That's just excellent.
That's right.
And wait, what do they look like in the springtime? They have these beautiful flowers?
Wow,
spectacular.
Gorgeous.
Well, what about the fall time? I guess they're just drab, right? No, they're beautiful. They got these great orange colors. It just makes you sick, doesn't it? Everyone planted these trees. They thought they were the next best thing. This
yeah.
is why they say there's like, oh, this tree is the closest it comes. They thought that this tree was going to be the next big thing. They being the Forest Service and then later landscape architects and people who are like, oh, we're going to make a really nice thing. And then there is all of the post-World War II development. When they started making all these gigantic developments, in the post-war era, they wanted to plant these beautiful trees.
Right.
So these are the trees that they decided to plant.
Wow.
Because these trees were so popular and like pushed. I think Lady Bird Johnson like said these ones. I think she's the famous like plant enthusiast first lady of Lyndon Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Of his presidency.
I see.
And so she was like, yeah, we should plant things. But she had this famous thing like, let's replant, like plant flowers along the interstates. Like she was really, really like beautifying the United States. This was one of the trees that she touted. So
wow,
she said we should do this. The nursery industry said we should do this. The people who worked at the arboretums were like, we should do this. This is a great tree. It checks all the boxes. And then lo and behold, what happens?
It checks one box we weren't looking to check.
Exactly, which is an awful smell and then an invasive species.
Two boxes.
The third box, though, comes with the last bit about these trees. A, they're stone fruit trees, just like cherries and apples and all these other things. Mm-hmm. So as soon as, I guess they're technically, I don't think they're technically stone
fruit.
Yeah, whoops, sorry, take it back.
They're palm fruit trees.
Yes, exactly. Yes, nice job. So they ended up, they sprout just like everything else. So if you nick them, they're going to send up sprouts from the roots. If you cut the top off, which you shouldn't do, but if you do, because people do, it's going to send up all these other sprouts. If it gets one little bend in it, it has all these sprouts that come up like an apple tree, you know, with just a million new sprouts that come straight up.
Sounds like coppicing.
It is. It's coppicing when you don't want coppicing to happen.
Casey is, I think maybe you smiled because I've mentioned coppicing about seven times in the last few weeks I learned a term. And I bleed it dry.
Like ruckus.
And then I move on.
Hey, that sounds good. Leave it as a husk in our wake.
Like the morphology.
Yeah, but I love it. I think you should keep using it all the time.
Thanks.
I think you should use it when it shouldn't be used.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God. Okay, so I got to wrap this up because I'm just going to go crazy talking about this tree. But the biggest thing is that it also, it just falls apart. So they planted a million different varieties of them. They grew them at mock speeds and planted them everywhere.
Right.
Because they were meant to be the archetypal tree of just the new development in the world. Help put yourself a nice Bradford pear in front of your new single family home out in the suburbs. Great work.
Speaking of, how much are we, you know, if a city orders from a nursery, is that how that works?
Yeah.
Or from whoever?
Yeah.
Whomever. Orders like 5,000 Bradford pears.
Yeah.
What are they paying per unit?
Oh, God, like 20 cents.
Really?
All right. No, I'm making that up a little bit. Let's
talk modern day. Like, you work for the city.
We don't get them like that. Well, I mean, I guess we don't buy them anymore because they're such bad trees.
Oh. Give me a ballpark. I don't know.
They're cheap. Like, you could get a full-grown tree for like $30 or $40 or something. When you get a nice tree that is actually worth a damn, it's more like $200 per tree.
Okay.
So they are dirt cheap, and they're grown everywhere, and everyone thinks they're so nice. They think they're getting this beautiful tree because they're touted as these big, beautiful white flowers. They don't tell them about the smell. They don't tell them how they're awful trees and they sprout. They don't tell them how they're going to get about 30 years old and then just start falling apart. Anytime you get a little bit of snow load, they just rip themselves in half. But then they rip themselves in half, and guess what they do?
They just grow on back.
They sprout like a hydra.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's so awful.
Casey, we've never done this before, but in the heat of the moment, what is your golden cone score
for
the Bradford pear?
2.1.
Whoa!
2.1. This tree sucks. I hate this tree.
That's really low.
I don't even like it. I don't even think I like it in its native area. I've never been to China, and I've never seen it in its native area. However, it probably grows a very minor way, and it gets outcompeted by all the other cool-ass trees in China.
2.1 golden cones of honor.
I gotta take a step back.
For the Bradford pear from dendrologist Casey Clapp is icing his brow.
I'm so upset.
That was maybe the most fervorous I've ever seen you.
I should take a step back. See, people you're going to be like listening to this, and you're going to look in the mirror and realize your eyebrows have been singed off.
Well, speaking of taking a step back, let me explain the rating system of the show. Every episode, we talk about the tree, then we give it a rating from 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. This season, honor is spelled H-O-N-O-R. Back to our American spelling.
That is classic. I was hoping you were going to do like a H-O-N-R, and we could make it like a Silicon Valley kind of cool thing.
Internet speak.
Yeah, exactly.
So Casey, 2.1 golden cones of honor for the Bradford pear.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Look at it and walk away.
Here's my review of the Bradford pear. I think the fact that it smells as such is hilarious. I think it's really entertaining how passionate people are about the smell of this tree.
It's also invasive.
You are also passionate about the invasiveness and the ugliness of it when it falls apart and just starts growing new heads. All of these are positives to me.
What?
I think it's a fantastic tree.
Alex!
I'm going 9.1 golden cones of honor for the Bradford pear. And you can't stop me.
I'm going to break my microphone.
My cones are my own.
Your cones are your own, and your cones are dumb. They smell, and I hate them.
No.
I can't believe this. A 9.1?
Yeah, I think it's hilarious.
You put this on par with, like, the ginkgo?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, for different reasons.
Where's our stats keeper? I know we every now and then he sends a message.
Oh, yeah,
when we
send
us a message. Tell us where this lands on Alex's review board. Well, need you.
The ginkgo I gave a perfect 10.
Yeah, that's right. This is a 9.1.
Don Redwood, I think I gave about a 9.1. Yeah.
Wow. Alex.
I think it's a hilarious tree. Thank you, nature, for making it. It's extremely entertaining.
Thank you, nature, for making this. What? That averages out to be like more than some other trees.
Yeah. I think it's a 9.1.2.1.
Jeez, that's a disgusting average.
Yeah. Well,
oh my God.
It's a disgusting tree.
You make me sick.
All right, Casey. It is time for our first game of season 3.
I'm in a daze right now, Alex.
You know what? I say this as your friend and co-host and business partner. I need to get over it.
Wow.
This is a new game, Casey.
Okay, I'm going to try and focus. Okay, a new game, Alex. What?
It's called Trick or Tree.
Oh.
Here's how it works, Case. I am going to say to you a binomial scientific name.
Oh, okay. All right.
You are going to tell me if it's something that I made up, a trick.
Oh.
Or real binomial name for a tree.
A tree.
That's right.
All right, okay.
Trick or tree. Simple concept.
Simple concept. Hard to execute. Can it be done? We'll find out.
We're about to find out. I see your laptop is open there, and I have all the answers on the show notes.
I just want to see.
Okay, thank you for proving. Casey's turned his computer around to show me he's not tabbed into the show notes.
And I will not look at them right now.
That's right. Casey?
Yes.
This is not timed or anything.
Okay.
Just FYI.
Okay.
There's going to be no timer.
Okay. I really like the speed rounds, but it makes me panic.
Right. I'm not looking for that today.
Okay. It's kind of like gets me, all jittery, so I feel like I'm ready to go.
Okay. Ready?
Okay.
Here is your first trick or tree.
Ooh.
Pyrus alucarnum.
Alucarnum.
Trick or tree.
Alucarnum. Alucarnum. Trick.
You are correct. It is a trick.
Yes.
It is something that I am calling the vampire pear.
Oh, why is that?
Alucarnum, named after Alucard of Castlevania fame.
Yeah. Well, that's what gave it away for me, for sure.
All right. Ready for next one?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Magnolia tulipifera.
Ooh, that's another trick because it's actually Liriodendron tulipifera in the Magnolia family.
Casey, you are correct. It is a trick.
Oh.
I'm calling that the tulip magnolia.
Yes. Oh, God. I was really worried that you're going to be like, Casey, you're an idiot. I was like, uh-oh.
Certainly not the case.
All right, thanks.
E.
Ooh.
Casey, here's your third one. Ready?
Yes.
Quercus coccinea. Trick or tree? After every one, I'm going to say trick or tree.
Okay, sorry. I keep cutting
you
off.
No, it's okay. It's part of the game. It's canon.
It's canon.
Quercus coccinea. Trick or tree?
That is a tree. That's the scarlet oak.
That is correct, Casey. Mm,
all right.
You have earned a piece of candy.
Yes, I would like a piece of maple candy.
You know, I never have candy in my home just because it's a bad idea for me.
I think it's fair.
But I have so much candy right now.
You do?
I kept having hankerings.
Do you have Smarties?
No, but I have sweet tart ropes,
ooh,
which are not related.
No, but I'm glad that you brought that up.
If you're interested, it's the cupboard over my silverware.
Honestly, I'm only interested in Smarties.
No, oh, sorry.
I know a lot of people aren't going to like this. That's my favorite candy.
Oh, that's kind of old school of you.
I like Smarties. Basically, I'm like, is that semi-flavored chalk? I'll take it.
That's on brand.
Yeah.
There have been millions of cool candies invented since, and you're still a Smarties man.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly right.
All right.
Can I get a Werther's original, please? Thank you.
I like that black licorice chewing gum.
It's just black licorice.
All right, Casey, here is your fourth okay. tree or trick. Prunus californica, trick or treat?
Ooh.
Prunus californica.
You just said trick or treat.
Oh, trick or tree.
All right. Okay. Prunus californica, that would be the something that's called the California cherry. It could also be another thing like a peach or a pin cherry or something like that from California. Mm. I've never heard of it. I think it's a trick.
You're correct.
Oh, yes.
That is a trick. It's something I'm calling the California cherry.
I think that's a very good thing to call it.
Thank you very much.
I think we should draw up what these would look like.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, each one of the tricks.
Next one.
Yeah.
Acer machinarium.
Ooh.
Acer or machinarium.
Machinarium.
Trick or tree.
Acer machinarium or machinarium.
Yeah.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Sure. Wow. Look at that. Acer machinarium. Would you like me to spell machinarium?
I would like that.
M-A-C-H-I-N-A-R-I-U-M.
Machinarium. I think that's a trick.
Casey, you are correct. That is a trick.
Yes.
Something I'm calling the machine maple.
Okay, yeah, that seemed very mechanistic. I was like, that looks like a robot in tree's clothing to
funny,
me.
Funny you should say that. It is, Machinarium is the name of an indie point-and-click adventure puzzle game.
Awesome.
That I love, and I took it for this game.
I think that's very fair.
Next one, Casey.
All right, all right, all right.
Oxydendrum arboreum.
Ooh.
Trick or tree?
That one tastes like it's a little bit of both to me.
Oxydendrum arboreum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep, yep. In fact, that tastes sour to the tongue. I think that's a tree. That's the sourwood.
You are correct, Casey. Yeah. That is the sourwood.
Pascal, pascal,
pascal. Well done.
Thank All right. you.
Last two.
Oh, this is exciting.
Nysa aquatica.
Mm-hmm.
Trick or tree?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That, I know, is a tree. I've never seen it before in my life, but I know where it grows and I want to see one. That is the water tupelo.
Casey, you are correct. That is a tree.
Yes.
This is kind of a mashup of trick or tree and binomial bonanza.
This is a little bit, yeah. This
you're
is
getting
fun.
Bonus points for each of these ones that you named correctly.
Oh, what? Is that another piece of Werther's original, Grandpa?
That's right, son.
All right.
All right. Last one, Casey. Omnino lichentiosis.
Could you say that one more time?
Omnimo lichentiosis. Lichentiosis. Omnino lichentiosis. Trick or tree?
That's a hard one. Omnino?
Omnino.
Omnino.
Lichentiosis.
Lichentiosis.
That's it.
Honestly,
omnino lichentiosis.
Lichent?
Lichentiosis.
Lichentiosis. Omnino? I want to say yes because it's so complicated that a part of me is like, there's no way Alex came up with this. So I'm gonna say that's a tree.
Casey, it is a trick.
No, I was so close, Alex. Why did you do this to me?
Almost a shutout. Of course, omnino lichentiosis in Latin, completely arbitrary.
You are joking me.
Wow.
Omnino lichentiosis.
The ultimate irony.
Whoa. I just got got. That's a Greek tragedy that I just went through right there.
That's right, Casey. That was trick or tree.
Jeez.
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A.
Yep.
This week, our question is from Camilla. Hello. Hi, Camilla.
Hi, Camilla.
I was wondering, if you are growing a tree in a pot, will it only ever have the fungal associates that happen to be in the soil you planted it in?
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean for the health of the tree? Is there any way you can help it find its fungal buddies? Or can the right buddies find the tree through pore dispersal in the wind? Basically, are potted trees sad, sick, and lonely? Thank you, Camilla.
Oh.
Casey, I love this question because... you know, fungal associates. I'm a big time fungal associate fan.
I think it's reasonable. I'm also a big time fungal associate fan.
See, this is the sweet rich irony.
Yeah.
Fungal associates are a fan of this podcast.
Yeah.
And we're a fan of fungal associates.
Exactly. It's a self-perpetuating system.
Yes, it has layers.
It does. It really does. Like an onion.
Well, Casey, what do you think?
Okay.
Are potted trees sad, sick, and lonely? Yep. Or will they find their own fungal associates, or do you have to introduce them to them?
Will they find it? Oh, I love that question, because it just, I imagine like some tree that's just like afloat in the ocean, just looking for its fungal associates, yeah. You know? It's like all of a sudden it's going to be like, it's at a party, it's walking around, doesn't quite know who it is, where it's at, and all of a sudden like the crowd parts and like, you know, air supply comes on, uh-huh. making love out of nothing at all. Then you look over and you're like, wow, there's my fungal associate.
And she's like, hi, I'm Chantrell.
Oh, that was so good. Yes. Oh gosh, I need to watch this 80s movie now.
It is so hot in this room.
It is. We're going to get through it. Anyway, the answer to that question is both. Yes, trees and pots are sad, alone, and lonely, but also they will find their own fungal associates over time if conditions are right.
Interesting.
So there are many oftentimes that people would plant a tree, like this happens in forestry, where they would cut all the trees down, all the fungus in the area would die or start to change to a different kind of fungus. They plant the tree back, and there's not a whole lot of fungus there for those trees to connect to.
Right.
But that's because they live off of other trees. So if you don't have the trees, then the fungus goes away, right?
I think we talked about this in our Patreon old growth episode.
We absolutely did. And it's exactly the case here. So that sad, lonely tree that's growing in the pot, it probably does not have the fungal associate that it wants initially when you plant it in there.
Right.
Because it's just not there. Even if it did have pores that came over and it grew down into the soil, when it went down there to try and find a buddy to live with, it couldn't find it.
Because fungal associates also need fungal associates.
Exactly. You see it exactly the way it is.
Interesting.
So this community-based metaphor is just deep. It's thick.
Perfect.
Yeah. So in this case, there are pores that are just dispersed all over the place. But let's say that you're planting a weird exotic kind of tree in a pot in your yard in the middle of Portland, but that tree is actually from some completely different place, then its fungal associate may not be there. There may be another fungal associate that will come and live and kind of take over that, but that fungal associate also needs resources in the soil itself.
I see.
So most of the time, there is already fungus there. It's already floating around. It's going to find what it's going to find. But sometimes the pot just doesn't have the nutrient resource that the fungus wants itself. And that tree would not be dying or sad and lonely and unhappy because it doesn't have a fungal associate. It would be sad and dying and unhappy because it's in such a constrained little area.
I see.
Where tree roots will want to grow out as far as they can in every direction except down. They go only like in top 2 to 3 feet of soil.
Right.
Sometimes only like up to maybe 5 feet at most. But they just want to grow straight out. So as soon as they hit that side of the pot, they start circling around and they use up all their resources really, really fast because they're huge things most of the time.
That sounds kind of maybe like uncomfortable and painful. Like you're trying to fit into clothes that don't quite fit you.
Yeah. The one that I have, or the analogy I've provided has been similar to foot binding, where you are literally trying to keep something that should be growing larger a small size. It's not quite like foot binding, but it's like bonsai. They do this a lot, where they specifically keep cutting the roots and keeping the tree more or less small and stressed so that it is always constantly growing out to the sides of the pot, and then they pull it up and they prune the roots again, so then the tree keeps growing out, gets pruned back, growing out, pruned back, but they're doing that to the roots.
Here's my own similar foot binding metaphor.
All right.
It's like a sourdough starter that you feed, but you don't dump out half.
Oh, yeah. So he just gets like mashed into this tiny little thing and explodes out of the top.
That's right.
Yeah. It's exactly like that, except there is no top. It's so it just...
not going to explode.
Yeah. But it also runs out of water and it kind of seals up and gets root bound on itself.
Oh,
and then,
God.
So you end up getting this this plant that has a bunch of roots. The soil is not quite there. It can't function correctly because it's like cutting itself off in different places. And there's just too many roots to survive. So even if you put a bunch of water in there, it just absorbs as much as it can, but the rest kind of just flows away.
Well, that's terrible. Yeah. Sounds like a tortured life.
It is. So I wouldn't keep a tree in a pot for too long. And if you do, make sure to pull it up and prune some of the roots every now and then, and then put it back in there, kind of fluff the soil around a little bit. I am not a very good bonsai-er or bonsai-er, depending on how you say it. But there's lots of different resources on how to do it well and keep the tree, if not happy, because I feel like if we're going to add that kind of idea to a tree, maybe if you leave it in a tiny pot and you constantly cut its roots back and then replant it, the tree's probably not going to be stoked. But you do it when it sleeps, and then you when it wakes up in the springtime, it's like, oh, I'm just going, and it just goes.
Right.
It can go either way.
So maybe a pot would be good for like an intermediary step.
Yeah, exactly. But at some point, you either want to go full bonsai, which is you are taking care of that tree as if it is a child that needs to be fed and watered every single day.
Yeah.
Or you just do it so it gets big, and then when you find a nice place to plant it, you put it in the ground. Once it's in the ground, there are fungal associates all over the place. Those fungal associates will get together. They'll work on that tree. Tree will work on the fungal associates. It also has different resources in the ground that those fungus many times are eating. So they would be decaying organic matter. They would be getting into untapped resources that are further out, or finding nitrogen that's in there that hasn't been broken up yet, and they'll be metabolizing that.
That's when the party really starts.
That's exactly when the party starts. That's when everyone's like, hey, what's up? Oh, who, you're here? Oh, what's up? Yeah, yeah. And then everyone's connected.
Thank you so much for your question, Camilla. And if you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com.
That's the one.
Go ahead and throw tree question in the subject line. That helps us out a whole lot.
You sure do.
Follow us on Instagram at arbitrarypod. That's ArbitraryPod. Or you can support the podcast even more by joining our Patreon, the Tree Huggers, the Arboretum, the Cone of the Month Club. You've heard it all before.
We love you guys.
We love you so, so, so much.
And welcome back. We made some changes, didn't we? We had a new theme song that we thought was pretty fun.
Yes.
Yeah. We didn't think we were stagnant, don't get us wrong.
No, but it was time for a bit of a polish and shine.
We just like adding new things. Alex was like, I found another cool song. I kind of want to, should we just do this? I'm like, let's do it.
Yeah, we are adaptive beings, much like the trees we covered,
yep,
Casey.
That's exactly right.
We are the Bradford pair of people.
No, get out of here.
Get over it, man. It's true. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. I think we're in for a good season, Case.
I think we are.
Thanks so much for listening. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Au revoir. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barfold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Bundles.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.